call me to work. If I'm out of meetings, then I'm going to get a copy of the minutes from last night.
So we have the minutes from December 8th, which I guess we should have present, I guess, the members of that, right? No, I know what I'm saying, but like I'm thinking that Ken's here, John's here, and Chris was not there, but, so.
You still got the door.
Your call. Yeah.
Just as it presented.
That's fine.
Okay, who's the attorney?
Yeah, we have someone. Yeah. Okay, let's later on. Can you do the honors of moving the minutes from the 8th?
I'll move the minutes. Can
I get a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye. All those in favor? I move the minutes from February 4th.
Close the favor.
Aye.
Over the phone. Okay. 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 This is the recovery agency report. I see Tim was unable to be here, Charlie.
He extends his apologies. His 12-year-old son is having a birthday party and his parents are taking him out for dinner. And so he did say to me, put your cell phone on conference call. If there's any questions that you get that you can't handle, call me and I'll help. So,
okay,
so Mr. Chairman, recently the audit firm of Sigler, Tarchio, Allen, and Churchill did an audit of the Recess Recovery Institute. And I'll just touch on the highlights of the audit. In short, the audit is good. There's really nothing to be concerned about. But we had some concerns with them when they came on board, and we directed them toward our transfer station scale houses where cash was being transferred on a daily basis, and we wanted them to do an audit there and let us know what their recommendations were. And also on our fuel, diesel, and gasoline pumps, we may be doing something there also. We wanted to see what they thought about how it was being handled at this point in time. So they reported back to us and they said they spent 3 days in surveillance of the transfer stations to see if in effect there wasn't any problems as far as the transfer of cash was concerned. And they reported back to us that they didn't find anything out of order, but they did make a recommendation that they thought the agency should install surveillance cameras as a backup. It's my understanding that the county, and I know this for a fact at the courthouse because, as you know, I'm working there part-time, there's surveillance cameras all over the place there. So obviously the county goes out to bid for surveillance cameras, so the board directed Tim Rose to piggyback his bids with Mark Ryder. Mark Ryder is the new purchasing agent.
Okay.
Took Robin Peruso's place. So he did. So the surveillance cameras are on, the quotes are coming, and we should have the scale houses under surveillance on a regular basis, along with the pumps, the diesel pumps and gas pumps. So that's a plus as far as what we're doing. I was a little bit concerned when Legislator Rodriguez at the meeting of the committee to improve, the commission to improve what we're doing with recycling is concerned. My concern was that there were three items on the agenda that were not addressed, and I thought something would be done with them. And the three items were flow control of recyclables, the 10-year solid waste plan, and the roll-off containers. Okay, clearly the roll-off containers are a problem. Most recently we sent a letter to some of the towns that are really abusing the roll-off containers, and so far we haven't gotten any returns, but this is what's going on with our roll-off containers, and this happened yesterday. Tim Rose emailed, I'll pass this around, emailed this to me to show me what they're dealing with. This is a roll-off container that's way overloaded, okay? And it's reached the point where our drivers are not going to pull them away. So we have now, not only do we have an insurance issue and a safety issue, we now have a union issue. So the board has authorized Tim Rose to pull the boxes wherever we're running into this. I alert you because you're going to get the calls. When we start pulling the boxes in two of the towns, this is where Warson and Marbletown are in constant violation of safety rules, insurance rules, and now our drivers are involved. So this is what we're doing. This is good. You want to pass this around?
Sure. Yeah. Question on down still, Charlie?
Excuse me?
No. Question
they're, down. They're doing that with the hydraulics of the backhoe.
Huh? Marbletown is not crushing. We had drivers in a meeting with they don't
Michael Warren?
Yeah, they don't crush them. There's other issues.
We have pictures of them crushing it.
With what?
I don't have them here, but I'll bring them
over with a backhoe.
It's my understanding that Tim even said that Robert Towns come in much lighter than the other towns.
This the letter was directed to Mike.
Well, we don't need to discuss
that. Yeah.
At this point, nobody should, I guess, should be doing it.
There were other issues, but our truck back in, and there was some personality issues, and it was a lot of sport. It was my understanding that Robert Towns is not crushing them.
Yeah.
And so the one that you're showing the pictures of is Warson?
That's what we're saying.
Yeah. Yesterday.
Yeah.
So are we pulling the...
Well, no. Leonard Distel,
yeah.
The town supervisor, came to the scene. And Tim Rose was there along with Charlie Whitaker and the driver. Mm-hmm. And he kind of indicated that he was going to be in compliance. So we'll give him a chance to see sure about being in compliance.
I guess there's a concern of mine is to give these people too many last chances. I mean, the last one was the last chance.
No, exactly. And what you're saying is right. And the letter addresses that.
When you say they're becoming
the danger is...
I mean, I'm looking at that, and is there a cop or anything that goes on those?
Yeah.
When they haul it.
Yeah.
Well, how then is that a bad
there's, when you pat it down, you're increasing the pressure on the back door.
And the side. And the side.
And then on the side, you're causing damage to the box itself, where it could have a catastrophic failure on the road, and it's causing
furniture rust.
That's exactly what our insurance company is telling us.
They're trying to save pull charges.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
By packing it like you would, like your own compactor at home? Trying to, you're running the risk of, killing somebody or breaking stuff to save $45.
Can I ask through the chair, Charlie, I think maybe it's actually a question for you, Peter. I think maybe we should circulate the letter that was sent to the towns, to all the legislators, because legislators who represent these towns ought to know what's going on. Even if it's not happening in their particular town, just know that request has gone out.
Charlie,
you
have the letter?
You start getting a call.
Yeah,
you know,
we're on a
committee, but
if
somebody's
not
on
the
committee,
I'll have
Tim Rose
tomorrow morning. Send it to Peter. Send it here.
Send it here. Send it here. Someone make sure it gets in everybody's mailbox. We have all of their emails, so we can email this right directly to them.
That's really easy.
Wouldn't that be the right thing to do?
That's fine.
Okay.
We can do agendas and everything.
That's fine, as long as you're not aware.
The whole legislature.
Even if you include a list of frequent offenders,
what's the next move then?
Did you pass that around? Okay. And this is from the board. Be advised that pursuant to the board of directors, this is from Tim Rose to the two town supervisors. Directive, there will be no further warnings prior to removal of agency equipment. Moreover, because of the severity of the violation and the pattern of ignoring agency directives, service to the MRDC will not be reinstated, instituted, I'm sorry. Should you have any questions in regard to this matter, I may be reached at Tim Rose to the town supervisor.
All right, so where does that leave the town then?
Well, we were waiting for a written response. Okay, we so far we didn't get that. This date is dated.
You're independent of the county. I mean, if they're abusing your equipment and not living up to your procedures, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, but it's about keeping the volume up and leaving, you know, and getting along with the towns as best we can. You know, that plays into this equation also.
I always like to have guys walk in the door and cause trouble. And eventually, you don't let them come in the door anymore.
Okay. I like it. I think that's what the consensus of the board is that's the direction we're going to move in.
I mean, Charlie, I'm hearing stories that they're taking stuff that normally was recycling and throwing in the tin pile and taking a lot of stuff like that. So they're trying to...
One of the photos shows that.
Well, I heard it.
The problem, and one of the things that we're hearing, you know that Tom Briggs is our code enforcer, right? And he's doing a phenomenal job. He got all those pictures yesterday. One of the things that we're hearing is that many of the town's residents get free passes to the transfer stations. So,
and I'm Marble Town.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm hearing it from some supervisors, okay, that this is what we should be looking into because... The revenue that they would generate if they all paid their share at the transfer station would offset the expenses. Now, because that revenue is not being generated, they're selling recyclables to make some money to maintain the
operation. Oh, but that's still an ugly movement.
No, but that's what I think our contract, they have to give the recyclables to.
Well, that expires.
If a town gives free permits, the tipping fee is the same, the pickup charge, the pull charge is the same. If they're swiping the tin or something, that's a different issue.
Well, that's...
I mean, let's say Olive decided to underwrite the whole thing, which they don't.
Well, one of the pictures that are taking the deposit, they're
not right. Selling them, but they're taking the deposit models.
And they're giving them to... I mean, they're giving them to the boy
Scouts. Yeah, that's
I mean,
a good thing, but...
I know. I mean, it's not
what they're
doing.
Crazy.
I agree with John totally that the idea of whether or not a town gives the permits away free or lets people, that's a town problem and it's a town budget problem. If they're in violation of a contract, that would be a different thing. The problem that I see, and that's why for all those months when Leon was here, I kept saying, are you going to get the town to sign extensions? And Leon said, no, we're going to go without signed extensions. So right now you're operating without contracts.
Mm-hmm.
What made it that the towns weren't allowed to take those deposits was the contract. Now if you don't have a contract, yeah, you can walk away from it. You can say, well, we don't agree with you taking the nickel deposits, so we're going to walk out. But it's not a violation of a contract if a contract doesn't exist.
But if there's no revenue source, then wouldn't that be driving them to sell the recycled
equipment? That's not you, the micromanager.
They'll pick up your recycling and reduce the cost. That was, remember last
year. But they've never gone to sign anything, so there's no contract that says that they have to.
But
you
know what I mean? We're going to stop picking them up.
Ken? Charlie, in this picture, and in a couple of pictures, I'm seeing... You know, are they not separating things properly either? Because I'm seeing C&D, garbage, recycling, and metal.
That's another issue. Yes.
I mean, I see, you know, all that stuff is supposed to be in different boxes.
Exactly.
You know, they're all in the same box. So that was, you know.
I had one more question, sorry. How long, in terms of back to the original thing with the smashing of the boxes down, I see that, you know, you sent the letter out, but how long has it been going on? Because
I never heard that. It's because we don't go to the supervisors.
They never reported it.
This has been going on since 2012. This is what the boxes look like that they are abusing. One of the other things that the board gave Tim Rose permission to do
was to piggyback with the county for a scrap dealer, because we have some 75 boxes that are beyond repair, and the scrap value of them is considerable. And so he has been in touch with Mark Ryder in that regard also. So if you, you know, so you know what's going on.
How old are the boxes?
Oh, some of them. So it's selling the scrap, because all they're doing is hanging around collecting the rust at this point in time. You know, there's no reason to keep them.
Why doesn't the agency sell its own scrap?
Excuse me?
Why does the agency have to piggyback with the county to sell scrap metal?
As opposed to going out to bid for a scrap dealer, they're piggybacking with the purchasing department. We've been doing that now for the last year and a half with the purchasing department of the county. The county purchases for a $360 million budget. We purchase for a $16 million budget. Everything that we need is...
You're selling something. You're not purchasing it.
You've got to go to
bid. You've got to
sell something?
They can't give it away.
That's right. I'm very good at being killed in the scraps. You just don't take it to the junkyard and drop it off.
Yeah.
I like to
For example, so you say, are we getting a better deal by piggybacking?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Are we?
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the time.
More
time.
No, I know. The
time involved.
Try to.
Okay.
We'll get a better deal. That's it.
Okay.
Should I have any questions for me?
Anybody have any other questions?
Yes, if I may. I didn't quite understand what Jim Rose said at the RRA meeting, but I have the impression that they are starting to purchase new roll-off containers, that there's a...
No. They're not, and that was held up, and Leon Smith held it up. He said, hold that up until we find out what the towns are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we don't want to buy a bunch of new boxes, and then we're not going to use them.
Yeah. At the very last RRA meeting, Tim actually called it to my attention, and I thought he said that they were creating a schedule, not to replace all the whole fleet or whatever it is, but that they were repairing some and that they were going to purchase some.
You're right. But we only have one welder on board to repair them, so it takes a while to repair them.
But he said he's buying them.
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. He came to the board and Leon, and I think he did it by phone, because Leon is in Florida. I think he said, hold up until we find out. We get a response to the letter from the town supervisor.
My interpretation is at the meeting, Tim said they were being purchased, and now you said they were on hold, so Manny was just asking
for clarification. He said he wanted to purchase them, and Leon Smith overrode him and said, hold up on the purchase, and then we can do that like that.
All right, so the reason that I'm bringing it up is that, you know, there's got to be sort of a carrot and a stick approach. I think if the towns see that there's some effort on the part of the agency, and I'm not saying to spend, a huge amount of money, but the agency has not invested in its roll-off boxes in a very, very long time, at least 5 years that I know of, and has had a deteriorating, I don't know, you don't call boxes a fleet, but whatever the collective...
Inventory,
thank you. And I just think that if we want the towns the towns that are cooperating to sign a five-year agreement, and from the town's perspective, a five-year agreement makes sense because the agency pretty much, without, if you take out the fact that the revenue from recyclables fluctuates, but they know their costs for the next 5 years because they get it out and they have results. And out of that, there should be a way to budget for a gradual replacement. And I think that if you send the towns that signal, even one or two boxes, it shows that there's repairing and replacing I think that's going to send a very positive signal. Because right now, all the signals, and I'm not denying the problems, but all the signals are negative and punitive. And I get quite an earful when I go to the supervisors' association.
So, Mr. Green, don't you think we should come to some agreement about not abusing the agency's equipment before we buy new equipment? I do.
Your point is well taken, but I think that there has been a very long period of what I would consider neglect on the part of the agency with regard to the boxes. And that's not to deny that some of the towns are abusing the boxes.
In many cases, that sort of neglect has been accelerated by the abuse.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm standing in front of the agency here, you know, that takes some of the hits, but I mean, we've been dealing with the towns on a year-to-year basis and one-year contracts and extensions and operating without a contract now for, I think this is year number three at least, for most of the towns where we've either had a one-year contract with them or operating without a contract.
It expired in the end of 2014. It just
right, what I'm saying is that was a one-year extension. I think it might have been the second one-year extension. And, you know, as a business decision, they can't make a large capital investment until after they know what the towns are going to do. Some towns could, you know, they're not going to need to rebuy all these boxes. They have the towns go out to bid and have a private hauler come in and run the transfer stations, or if they close the transfer stations, or, you know, and they've really been, you know, the towns want something for nothing. They want to get a better deal than the private haulers. They want to get this, they want to get that, they don't want to pay for the boxes, they don't want to have any equity in the boxes, they, you know.
Has it been the agency that's been pushing the one-year contracts, or has it been the towns?
The agency had the first one-year extension
in order to get everybody on the same cycle. And then after that, the towns were not agreeing to a longer-term deal, so they signed another one-year extension.
Very well put. I mean, there's a lot of people that think maybe the RA just don't want to get out of that business. Let them go and bid with somebody to buy a box and haul it away and get out of that. Except that we got a lot of good people working and driving and they're union people and we don't want to get rid of them.
John, you're paraphrasing the chairman of the agency and that's Leon Smith's take.
Also. No, I'm talking about legislators.
Yeah, well, but he's saying the agency should get out.
So, I mean, but he just said that the towns want a deal. Well, the agency got out of it, the towns can make their own deal. They still have to bring the garbage.
We're not going to settle this tonight, but the agency is a public benefit corporation. And Tim sat here in a meeting and specifically said if the town of Ulster, or the, you know, town of Ulster, Hurley, some of the closer stations to the RRA privatized, it is going to really hurt the towns that are farther away. At the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned, as legislators, we don't say the town of Denny has more highway miles than the town of Marbletown, so we're going to charge their residents more money. I think it should be in the agency's interest to keep the towns on board, because as soon as we start losing them, we're going to sit here and we're going to get bills where we're going to charge Denning and Worthing and Marlboro and Shonga huge amounts of money when the folks that get better deals are leaving. So I'm not telling you guys with Detroit, you got to take care of equipment, but it's just going to start pulling boxes from people. You might get what you wish for. You know, these drivers may be out of jobs.
We're hoping the response to the letter will be favorable from the 20 towns. We're just talking about two towns.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just, you know, we're talking about trying to get out of the business. We get out of the business, there's going to be towns that are going to hit with huge increases, and then you want to start coming back to the house again, and we're going to have to figure out how to solve it. So we should try to keep everybody on board the way it's been.
Richard? I think Richard could not be more on point right now, because I think the first thing to remember is it is a public benefit corporation.
And so often when we talk about this, when you look at it from a business perspective, it's like, oh, does this make business sense? No, it probably doesn't. Or maybe it doesn't. Or maybe some of the board thinks it doesn't. So let's just get out of the business. And what's going to happen when we get out of the business, when the RA gets out of the business? Not only are we going to hear back about it, like you said, Rich, not only are some towns going to, when they go out to bid, it's not going to be double. Look for Sardis, when they went out to bid years ago, it was double the price. It's going to be quadruple. It's going to be a fivefold. And what's going to happen as a result is not just that we're all going to hear about the nightmare. It's going to be, it's going to mean the closure of transportation, which is going to mean garbage in the street. People, I mean, we live in rural communities. Not all of us, but a lot of us do. And for some people, the transfer station is where they bring their one bag of trash once a week. We've heard about it over time. And if, can you imagine if the Charlotte transfer station closed or the Gardner transfer station closed?
The public benefit thing is exactly right.
She's right.
And that's where we dropped the ball when we decided that we no longer wanted to work with the towns and those and the trash pickup and voted for flow control. You know, the rates went up significantly. And now we've got all sorts of problems.
You know, but John, we've got to wait for the next service.
On the one hand, I understand that I used to not subscribe to subscribe to that particular belief that the garbage would be in the streets. But then I spoke to a Gardner councilman who said that the transfer station was closed for a day unbeknownst to a lot of people, and they were just piling garbage outside of the transfer station gates. And so they went down there and opened the folks went down and opened it up themselves. But on the other hand, I understand the argument about being a public benefit corporation, but we also can't, the board of directors can't just willy-nilly spend $500,000 on new boxes without a commitment from people that are going to be using the boxes.
That was
where
our intent is.
Yeah. You're going to give us, protect them, take care of them, right. Use them properly. They are. Let's push them sideways to get them closer to the loading dock with the blade of a bulldozer.
Hey, I said last year, county should have invested, taken out the budget, spent $300,000, buy the boxes. The towns would have signed on a lot of them, would have lowered their prices, and we'd probably have a 5 or 10 year contract.
It might be time that we talk about it again.
Well, we talk about it. The county doesn't want to make an investment. The county thinks it, said they're done with the RA. We don't want to fund them. We don't want anything to do with them. But if we contributed money, like I think we should. Not $3 million like we have, or $2 million, but said here's $300,000. Go buy the roll offs and sign a 5 year contract with the towns, or a 10 year contract, so we don't have Ulster leaving in 6 months, and we don't have Esopus leaving, and we don't have the post transfer stations that are going to kill the other towns for $300,000 or $400,000 of investments from us is peanuts. It's nothing to the headaches it's going to cause down the road. And I brought it up last year, Tracy, and not your fault, but to me, nobody wanted to move forward with it. There was no interest in doing it. And
maybe it's time to revisit it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
what I'm
saying.
Okay, that's one person agreement.
What you're talking about is the net service fee.
Well, not a problem.
Let's take $300,000 out of contingency and buy roll-offs. Right. And then go to town and lower their full charges or lower whatever, and then you sign contracts with them, and we're done.
I don't think you would get much opposition from the board.
Thank you
for the opportunity.
Okay, so let's move on. Motion, resolution number 42.
I'll move it.
Can I get a second, please?
I'll second.
By Ken, second by Richie. Discussion.
Okay.
Establishing an environmental remediation reserve account.
Kathy, you're on.
Oh, hold on. You got a question?
I want Kathy. If you'd like Kathy to do the overview.
I would like to do this. Both Chris Ragucci and I reviewed it, both 42 and 43. We think they are, with some changes, Chris issued a memo. It was very extensive. He reviewed these memo. Chris issued a memo with some changes. Based upon those changes, both Chris and I about think with those changes and amendments, 42 and 43 are legally sound. I don't know what else you want to discuss. If you want to discuss an overview, but his memo is in writing, and I think it's very good. I don't know who read it or who got it.
Yeah, I got it. I have a question. You know, we talked about this remediation reserve account. This is going to be used, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, but for our homes that have been found to be contaminated?
Properties
in general.
In particular, that are identified as...
Why, and my question...
To be remediated.
Right, okay. So the DEC, that would be done by the DEC, I'm assuming, correct?
Well, it would be done by guidelines, but they're already delinquent. That's why we are involved with it. It's not something that's really identified.
My question with this is, why would we do that and not a new owner? Okay. Of the property.
Well, because we don't take title to it, because then we're responsible to clean it up. So we're not collecting it.
If we are responsible, I'll give you an example. IBM, there was a problem with the IBM site contamination.
Still is
to this day. Created a huge problem out there. Mm-hmm. If we take title to it, we own it.
Yeah.
Okay. We are responsible.
Is IBM paying taxes on it?
I believe they are. They
well, then where do we have no reason to take them? These first properties that
actually, it's the guy that took over the property.
You know, can I just say...
They sold that for like $3 million in entire
amount. Yeah. Pete, there's a property on Woodland Road by my house that the guys were dumping construction material there years and years ago. It was a beautiful farmhouse, beautiful property. And they got whatever happened. It became a toxic, but it became an issue. They left it, foreclosed it. It somehow was on a tax after 15, 20 years. I don't know if they had to pay to clean it up or what happened. It cleaned up. It just got put. We sold it at the tax sale. And
that's what I'm saying. Somebody
what happens is if they don't clean it up, they never collect taxes on it.
Nobody would buy it.
Nobody would buy it, and we don't collect taxes on it. So now, once it cleaned up, we took title to it, and then we sold it, and got now it's back on the tax rolls. People paid the county, whatever, $130,000 for the property, and now it's back on the tax rolls, and they're going to build a new house there.
But depending on how bad it's contaminated, it could cost...
People fit and choose ESP. It's not a blanket policy. I mean, they may choose not to take a piece of property, but they might choose one, let's say, in a commercial area. And through their research, and it's like, this one is worth remediating. And get some legitimate estimates through the DEC or remediation experts, remediate it. Probably already might have a buyer for it. Who knows?
Well, that's my thought is, why not have if you have a buyer for it, and you work that into an agreement where they do the remediation, you get it back onto the tax rolls.
You're not going to get a buyer.
I just have two just quick things. I understand, I guess maybe I probably would feel slightly more comfortable at least just knowing that number one, how many sites we have, or that we potentially might have that we'd be looking at that would be covered under this policy. Two, I guess, if we are focusing more on the phase ones as opposed to the remediation component, I understand, yes, sometimes it can be advantageous to find something easy to clean up, so to speak. But once you kind of start going down that road, it could be a slippery slope. Whereas if you're at least just doing the phase ones where you're just doing the assessment component, you're at least just, you're walking in with your eyes wide open, and whoever's buying it is also walking with their eyes wide open. At that point, the county is still accomplishing that sort of earnest money sort of component. And I guess the last thing, I guess the funding stream, and that's sort of covered, I guess, in Resolution 42 in the first resolve, it says that the proceeds of the tax sale for fiscal year 2015 beyond budgeted revenue, $675, which, by the way, I was actually looking for that. I actually couldn't find that particular... exactly where that was in the budget, but I'll go look again. But I guess partly this is a question to Ken. I mean, how much does that number fluctuate, you know, year to year? Meaning, I'm assuming your office is always conservative with regards to this number, but
Yeah, our request fluctuate. I'm sorry about the numbers. But the first is an analysis. They'll have it early. But it does fluctuate. it varies. You can't predict what's going to occur at the tax sale.
You can predict the county's going to make money on it because we have probably the last 15 years.
Sure, that's our
made
goal.
A lot of money.
Our goal is to at least bring back what we've done in the taxes. We do better.
We've always made tons of money. In the last several years, we've made quite a bit of money.
Property, so you have a dog, where you lose money, and you have money, you make money.
Yeah, those
problems.
Yeah.
Tracy.
So, a couple questions. So, the proceeds of the tax sale beyond the budgeted revenue, that's for the whole sale, that's the revenue for the whole sale. So anything beyond, and that doesn't take into account. We're just assuming whatever expense, like for the interim proceedings and all that stuff we do. That's just a part of regular county business. This is just
for
in terms of revenue.
Yes, and it's not necessarily designed to make money at that, mm-hmm. just to get it back on the tax rolls. It is kind of designed to break even.
Right. You mean the tax sale itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the work that's done.
Right.
Which is designed to get it in a point and a position where it gets back on the tax rolls.
Can I ask a couple of following questions? Do we know, over the last couple of years, does anyone have the data of what versus budgeted revenue mm-hmm. versus sale? Like, what were the budgeted revenue versus sale over the last few years?
I don't
think
they brought
that to
me last month. I haven't had it with me.
But was it discussed last month?
Are you talking about now all tax sales? Or just the state?
Isn't this the tax?
Yes, but I mean, the county brings in $1 million more than expense for tax sale. Some of these things never get sold. They're just there.
That's what I'm confused about. This, right now, what is resolution, is this resolution closing that for the whole tax sale, for all the properties listed, that anything above the budgeted revenue will go to the remediation fund, whether or not it's a remediation property.
Not the intent.
So
no.
That's what it says.
That's not all of it. Anything over what we budgeted. On the tax sale.
It's what's going on over
what?
Okay. I think it would be helpful to see what those overages were over, say, a few years. Mm-hmm. And Bert supplied it last month. I don't know if everyone looked at it, but that would be helpful so we know how much money we're talking about. And then the other thing that would be helpful to me is, and maybe but just right now, does someone have, and I spoke to Chris only very briefly about it, and he said that he had done it, but I didn't see the documentation. Does someone have a list of currently what properties are in foreclosure that even might fall into
the qualified ones.
Yeah, I would love to.
Couple things. First off, just to Legislator Rodriguez's point earlier, item number 5 in the policy and procedure for the use of the Environmental Remediation Fund, and I know it's not on this resolution, but it pertains to it.
Yeah.
The number 5, they start out with a phase, and then go into, whether or not we're going to do the remediation or not, and then that decision is made by a committee of a lot of people, and just to Snell's point, that he was just making it on the side, so I want to make sure it gets on the record here, that we expect to make more money from the tax sale every year, and that would normally go, he said, to reducing taxes or reducing the need for a tax increase. so it would be affecting the county's, you know, plan. My concern is how much money do we build into and expecting to make that would affect planning for a tax decrease. I mean, I would think if we that should be like a number that we put down somewhere.
Yeah, that would be. I'm sorry, not here tonight. I know we had the information at the last meeting.
Okay. Thank you. No, I understand that. I think my concern was just that once you start talking about remediation, right, you're getting involved in the, you know, potentially in the chain, you know, in the chain.
Yep.
You're, you know, once you start, sometimes you may have hit something in a phase one, and all of a sudden you end up in something much deeper than what you anticipated.
No,
so this is a thing where, I mean, so you understand the concern that I was just raising.
Coming from the environmental field, I totally understand that sometimes, you know, you don't...
Yeah, you didn't know all of a sudden.
Yeah, more than you expect.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. I'll just do my last comment. I look at it the way, you know, the town of... were worsening. It's always been my understanding that when they have a cable franchise with the cable company that pays a franchise fee to the town. So to use it, TVs. The town, a lot of towns take that money and they put it in the general budget. Pay salaries, pay whatever. Town of Worsing puts it in a special budget and then they pay Time Warner to continue to run it on top of what's agreed for to expand the internet throughout the town, therefore creating more revenue that comes in at special taxes, and then they can benefit their residents by improving, you know, the internet and the cable services. To me, this is sort of the same thing. If we're making a lot of money on tax sales, nobody's going to dispute that.
No.
We put it in a general budget. Why not take a portion of it, put it in a reverse fund? We have these properties that are now going to be paying more money for us down the road. They're going to be improving neighbors' properties. And their values, and it's just, to me, it's a win-win. It's not something, we're not losing money on tax sales. Personally, I think if somebody was $50,000 and we sold for $100,000, after fees, we should be giving the rest of the money back to the property owner. I don't think the county should be in the business of making money on people's mortgages. So here, to take some of this money and put it in a reserve fund to improve properties that were bad is really good business. It's smart business.
Hold on, Kathy. What?
Okay, and to that point, Rich, I'm not even disputing that, but per this, taking all that money. I mean, over the budgeted amount. So meaning, it's like you're just giving the example of that $50,000 was then making $100,000 at that point, that you're then maybe putting all $50,000 in there at that point. It's assuming at a certain point, budgeted revenue is $675,000, right?
Is that what it says?
That's what the resolution says, so I'm just saying, But
the thing is, they're still case by case. It doesn't mean you're going to spend that money every year. It doesn't mean you have to spend it. You may only use 10% of it. You may use 3% of it. You may not use any of it some years.
Okay. I think it's important that note some of the details. I think, you know, you made it. That's a very good question, and I think maybe Decker too. But this reads in detail, I just wanted to make sure I'm at the right spot. To be assessed, to evaluate, investigate, and or remediate. So you were creating an obligation for us to evaluate, to investigate.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important distinction. You don't have to do it. You don't have to take a white elephant environmental hazard.
Well, I'm saying, as far as I'm concerned, you're right. You don't have to do it. But once you have started it, you're obligated to it.
Yes.
Which allows the county access to the property to do the phase two. An environmental phase one is pretty much a desktop review. We have all that records and documentation available to us already. So we do get a sense of what properties are on the list and how close they are to other open spills and other environmental concerns, other brownfield sites, other superfund sites. this would allow something that is like a perceived brownfield, like a gas station, allow the county to enter that property and do a phase two investigation.
But without ownership? And
then within that.
Without ownership?
Yes. Without ownership.
Yes.
It's a temporary incident of ownership. Uh-huh. Without ownership, gain access to the property, do the phase two investigation. Then with that information, evaluate, maybe you do that for four properties that are all maybe old gas stations. And one of them, it's just a little bit of superficial information. It doesn't appear to be very, very much. You then take ownership of it. Use that phase two and auction it off. So you don't have to necessarily go to ownership. The other nuance of the law is that contamination on the site, if it's solvent contamination, you don't necessarily inherit that when you take title to the site. It's only for controlling contamination. So that's another thing you have to kind of feel through. And there's a lot of negotiation with the DEC that goes on.
And that's what I heard. So, you know, because that's the one thing I feel like I forgot about, how this actually interacts with, like, the Oilfield Compensation Fund and DEC and the AG's office, because that's a pre-established system that, you know, that also is going to basically have to be interfaced with and incorporated with what's actually going on here, so.
And that's where they actually look at, you know, maybe negotiating with DEC to release the lien.
We conservatively budget, and I know that, you know, there's a number listed, that, and I know that, you know, we don't budget everything that we expect to get in this type of an auction because of the way that it fluctuates. But I just want to be careful that we don't do anything without such a basis. But I know that this is going to lay on the ground and traverse there to lay on that as a way to
I just want to, John, this is your resolution. Would you be willing to limit how much money? Because right now it says beyond. It says,
maybe we should cap the,
put a cap on how much you're going to have.
I think that's all open for discussion, Pete. I mean, we have a lot moving forward. Look, now, what the cap would be, I'd like to talk to Chris and Kathy about it to make sure it's legally doable.
But well, I'll be honest, I have reservations, but you know, I'd like to know if we could put a cap on it.
Well, I think we'll tell.
Because I'm not going to get carte blanche to anything, as far as I'm concerned.
It's not carte blanche.
It is. Anything beyond, that's what it says.
See, you could allocate $20 million and spend $50,000.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're going to spend what you allocate.
But you'd have the right to $20
million. But, you know, think about this way. If we pass the resolution as it is right now, this the number 675 would only apply to this year's budget, and next year the executive, if he wanted to, could increase the budget to what they, you know.
No, you're not going to hit.
Exactly.
And then it'd be zero. So maybe put a number in here is smarter, because then we're guaranteed whether they make money or lose money. We're guaranteed
to have the executive could be less conservative with the budget.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I thought of an extra number that would help inform the discussion is. And now I'd like to see it over 5 years. What's the budgeted number for the proceeds?
Mm-hmm.
What's the actual overage for the proceeds for each year over 5 years? And what's the actual cost of the tax for each year? So you have the what's budgeted, what's over budget, and what's the actual cost. You have three numbers. If you're looking at those three numbers over 5 years, you're going to get a good sense of how the budget works against real numbers and how much, if we just were in place for 5 years, how much was going to go in this year. That's the first thing. The other thing I think that's critical, earlier you said 42 properties. What's the number of properties that we currently know are candidates for this, and how long have they been on the list? Because I think that this legislation brings up something really critical, and it kind of goes to your example of your property in your town. It's like the last thing any of us wants is for properties to be lingering on a foreclosure list without being remediated, because one, it's not great for the environment, two, it's not great for our bottom line. If you can get something off the list and get it sold, get back into the tax cycle. So, but I think without those numbers, like, I for one example, well, they exist. The numbers exist, too.
Wonderful.
Well, you can create the problem. Right, I'm telling you, you can get the numbers. Yeah.
But, you know, whether it's 10 or 120.
This is not inventing who we are. So you've done all over.
That
they're
there.
But to me, it's...
But okay. These properties, by and large, sit there. The people that are doing this work very closely with the DEC and the DEP and the DEJ and everybody else to reduce the local expenses. But it is a method for trying to get these properties, which could linger forever. And I know I've had property that somebody wanted to buy, and they put in the contract to, you know, if there's any environmental hazards, it's my responsibility. Well, I wouldn't sell it to them. So, either you, do I know there are any? There were none on the property, of course, but I'm not gonna put enter a deed or a contract that says that I'm responsible for whatever's wrong. If it turned out to be a problem, I'd walk away. It's what everybody does. Go up 28, the gas stations, you'll see them lining the road. They're just sitting there. I can go around and think of convenience type gas stations that are closed for 30 or 40 years. I'll bet you there's almost no institutional memory that they're there. But I'll bet you there's contamination there, and I'll bet you some of them someday will have problems being sold. And then what do we do when somebody walks away from them? And that's what's that might happen in IBM. You talk about that? We don't have to go out and do it. But if that guy's taxes get too high, he hands you the keys.
He had his taxes reduced almost.
I'm not getting that debate. He just hands you the keys. So there you go. It's yours.
Okay. But I just wanted that as a place to work for.
If I just ask another quick question, and I don't expect Brock Roman to come here every night, but if he's got stuff ready for Ways and Means, why doesn't he just bring it here?
If he did the last meeting.
In the environmental committee, based on the environmental right. aspect of it, and then send it to Ways and Means, and Bert can talk about the financial stuff there. That'd be my suggestion.
I would agree with that. What's the committee?
I'd like that hand shaved out, but okay. Whatever you want to do.
Which one are we on? 42 or 44?
Well, I mean, it's 42, but it's 42 and 43. Ken, you should probably amend your motion.
Do we have to amend 43 anywhere now?
We do have to amend
43. All right, then leave it alone. Scratch that. That's my suggestion.
All right.
Yeah.
We got
one more. Yeah,
I'm willing to be sold on this, all right? I mean, it's just more a matter of, so don't take me for right now. If you're forcing me to basically vote me, if this is like Ways and Means, we just kind of say, all right, hold off for a week and we'll vote on it next week.
Yeah,
we can't do that here, so, you know, I'll be a no right now, and then we'll be a couple of years before after I get to hear what he needs to say. But he's definitely coming to the next Ways and Means meeting?
He's there every year. He's the person every week.
No, I mean, but with regards to bid.
That's next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday? All right. I'm willing to keep an open mind, but, you know.
John, how long has this been making money?
It was put in last month.
Do you mind if we just...
I think we should move it to Ways and Means and let them hold it up for the financial reasons. To me, quite frankly, I have reservations about this until I read B's memo, talked to Kathy, talked to Chris, they did their research. This is not inventing the law. It makes sense to try to have a policy that the executive people can work with to try to remediate properties. And I want to move it forward. If Ways and Means have problems with it, if they want more financial data, so be it. I've never been in a rush to do anything. But I've also been in this committee where things get postponed and postponed and postponed and postponed. And vote it up or vote it down. This is new and different, and it's addressing something that hasn't been addressed in a specific way. It's a policy from the legislature. We're not establishing procedures, we're establishing policy that gives the managers of the county the opportunity to assess and try to remediate properties that are not, at this point, being productive. So, that's how I feel about it.
Okay. All right, well, I'll call for the vote. I'm not sure. Even if I vote for a yes, then I'm not going to guarantee I'm going to vote for it on the floor. I'll tell you that straight on. All right, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
For right now, no. But I'm keeping an open mind. And I'm going to be done in 1 second.
I'm not going to, right now, if I get what I'm looking for between now and then, I'll change my vote, but for now, I'm not going to be now. I would like that information, though, that Tracy requested, and I would like it in my box before the next meeting, the next general
meeting. Well, you should have it at caucus next
week. I want it before that.
The next general meeting is in 2 weeks. Do you want it before the meeting or before caucus?
I
want
it before caucus.
I think I can interrupt too.
Well, Bert's not going to be there until caucus night with the information.
Well, we don't have, okay, so that's for resolution 42. Okay, 43, establishing the policy and procedure for use of the environmental remediation.
I'll move it.
Second. Those in favor?
I just want to do a typo.
I think the word in the amendment, in Chris's memo, he uses the word instigate. I'm pretty sure he means investigate.
I'm going to find it.
Hold on. D1, reserved to be assessed.
Evaluate his memo.
That's the amendment.
That's the amendment.
Okay.
It says investigate. It's section 5.
They fixed it? Okay, you just wanted to make sure. To evaluate, investigate, and study the case. Go ahead. Okay.
I move to amend resolution number 43 as is in the
I only saw Chris. I didn't see the memo until getting here. I saw Chris a little earlier today.
But the deletion of number 8, I know that I know from talking to Chris that all these changes are in compliance with the charter. But does that mean, so that means once the account is set up, does it still follow, like if they spend $150,000, is that coming from the legislature or anything coming out of the account?
The contract for mediation, if it was more than $50,000, would have to come to the legislature, but I don't believe that the expenditure would have to.
Okay.
What we're trying to do is create a platform.
And empower.
Right. And empower him to move on.
Mm-hmm. 98.
Resolution number 98.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just speak, and I know Tracy's here. We both serve on the board of directors of Soil and Water. We are going to be asking for the legislature to pay for a audit of Soil and Water. To our estimation and information, it's never been audited, like a real audit. Their audit consists of, I swear to God, for the farmers down in the town, which is interesting, but not an audit.
I applaud and echo Legislator Ron's sentiment. I served on that group myself for 4 years, and it is very well-intentioned people having to do financial management of a lot of money, and they work incredibly hard, and they do a lot of great work, but they probably should at a certain point learn some financial controls, or at least have some financial controls in place.
And quite frankly, this would be less about management or things like that, and more about sure all the I's are dotted and the P's are crossed. I want to say that I think the Soil and Water is a great resource for the county. They do a good job. They make more money for the county in grant money than we give them exponentially. And I want to make sure that the committee understands and anybody who listens to these tapes understands that it's not a referendum on their management of the organization, but everybody should have outside eyes come in and look at something beyond that.
And did I throw for the clarification, every organization should have financial controls, okay? So don't misjudge that. My comments were either,
I feel like I needed to put the number.
Okay.
And just to verify that best practices are being followed.
Are there ways they could do things even
they're experts at what they do, not in
exactly. And the auditor we were thinking about using would be Dresser Malecki, the same auditor that did the county audit this year.
And actually, we had asked through the clerk for an estimate of what it would cost the business.
Yeah.
So it's pretty
all those in favor?
Aye.
Appointing members of the Yosemite County Solid Waste Management Improvement Commission.
Rodriguez, would you like to move it?
Would you like to try that one again? That's the one.
Rodriguez, I don't know.
Really?
That's going to go down in history as one of the funniest moments in history.
Ready to go, Ron?
Go on.
All right. So, I'm moving it. If, let's say Ron wants to second it. Let's say Ron, if you want to second it.
Second.
There you go. So, this resolution is appointing the mayor's designee, Greg Swazi, but there is still to be determined an at-large member. Our next meeting is going to be on the 16th, so the next day we could get people together. And I believe at that meeting we should be recommending another at-large member. So.
Okay. Thank you. I had a concern that was, I I heard about what process for the selection of the chairman at the last meeting, and there's a concern that I have because I was told that Mr. Swansea was allowed to vote for chairman at the last meeting, and I think that we have a legal problem with that because he was not on the commission prior to making that vote.
Okay.
So
if you have a problem with that vote, not to be too technical, I mean, as it is, I think that Supervisor Chipman and myself are both, by mutual consent, and I think by consent of the entire group, are co-chairs of the commission, okay?
Did that arise from a tie vote?
And he made the tie for not me. How about that? So, I'm just saying, but that, yeah.
How do you know? Because it was a secret ballot.
Right.
I'm just throwing that out there. I mean,
we are.
Well, also, I don't know if it's 100% up on board at a commission. I've never seen a commission vote by secret ballot either. But again,
I mean, again, at this point, I think that quite seriously, I think that having both Mr. Chipman and myself as co-chairs is actually probably the best outcome.
No, Mr. Ronk,
if you want us to go and re-vote on our meeting on the 15th, we'll just go and re-vote. Guys, and if you want, we'll just re-vote for co-chairs on our next meeting if you want, we will re-vote again on the 6th, on the 16th, and it will be...
It'll be the same vote if you re-vote on the 16th, probably. I mean,
at that point, I think Carl and I will actually probably just vote for ourselves as co-chairs.
That would make me more comfortable.
And if that makes you more comfortable, I will bring it up as the first agenda item. Because I guess technically at that point, I would still, even under this scenario that you spun, I would still technically be temporary chair, and I want to know.
I have no problem. Again, I would like to say for the record that I happen to, I'm not going to say it for the record, I'll say after the meeting, but I'm going to say that my comments were not directed at the fact that you were chairman or temporary chairman or co-chairman or any other kind of chairman. It's a concern to me to have a member of a commission who's not a member of a commission yet vote. That would be like having, Deputy Executive Cornell vote again for something.
The group was more concerned, I think, at that point of getting Greg up to speed and everything else and getting him, involved in the discussion than in any technicality of him voting or not voting. I think in the instance, again, I will go and make it the first agenda item just for you.
Do the best.
Okay. Is there anything else, Mr. Rock?
That's all I got.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
But just to clarify, I think it's a fair comment. I definitely supported the concept of Greg voting just because I felt he's going to be a member and, less thinking about the technical rules, but you raise a good point. We can re-vote. But just to also be clear, this to be determined, we would expect that there would be an amendment on the floor within the
Is it possible to provide us with some sort of a resume on their background or anything like that as well?
At the last meeting, I said to the group, because this is the idea being, we didn't want it to be sort of like a predetermined thing where it's going to be this person or it's going to be that person, right? I said, we need to go out to our entire network as a group and try to find somebody who is a member of the public or who just doesn't really have, that the preconceived notion, and or just making sure that we at least are putting it out there to the widest network of people. But we also said to be bringing, resumes or, bringing information on these people, so that way you'll actually have something when you actually vote on them on the floor. So you'll have something.
I appreciate that. And can I just follow on that, which go to the whole committee, but also to the whole of both caucuses, I think because you and I have spoken about it before, it's like if there's anyone outside of the commission itself that has a recommendation, by all means.
I think if we have to reinforce or reiterate, yes, please.
Right. I just don't want there to be like, you know, I don't want, because I know that when my caucus, you know, when we get the amendment for the for on the floor, the first question is going to be, well, where did this name come from, and, you know, and on, because I just don't want to replace it with a name we don't know anything about that, like, right away.
But that's also why, like, it was the earliest possible meeting we could have, which was 16th, and it's going to be 5:30.
It said 5:30, but I think it should be 5:30.
Well, I'll put it out to the group if they can do 5:15 or 5 o'clock or something like that. But it depends that not everybody can be there at 5 o'clock. Because remember, you've got to be from the private sector, and it's when he gets out of his job. So
I'm perfectly fine with
that. All right. So, yeah, that's the time you're talking about.
Let's go.
Call question.
Yep.
Call
question. Let's go.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
May I request to take resolution 129 out of order, so that way then not only I can get to it, but number two, then we could actually have the two briefly next to each other, so we can just get them out at the same time. You okay with that, Ken?
132.
Isn't that 129?
No, but we're talking about 132.
No, you're talking about two green
screens. Well, why don't we do 129 and then 1... I'd really like to do 129 last.
You want to do 129 last?
Yeah, rather than do...
Okay. Okay, we'll go the other way then. In that case, then Mr. Chair, I guess, the bus is wrong.
129, then 32, and then...
Okay, you're going to keep it the same.
No,
it's take 132. So what? So we're talking about AI as opposed to. It doesn't make sense to go and have one discussion, talk about policy, and then have another discussion on the same subject.
I'll move 109.
That's sure you do.
With all the discussion on green fleet policies, and legislator Rodriguez opened my eyes to the fact that we couldn't have a pilot before we had a policy. He said that a couple of times in the paper and on video and whatnot. So, you know, we sat down and thought about it and looked at some resources from around the country and came up with what we thought was a good policy. You know, we left some of the things in the policy. I hope you've taken a look at it. We left some of the things in the policy a little bit vague and open to the executive's determination, Department of the Environment determination on things such as idling and whatnot. But I'm not tied to everything in it. I'm tied to certain parts of it. And then there's certain parts that are open for discussion. Tracy and I had about a 45-minute long discussion the other day.
So, Mr. Ruffin, let's get to the ones I guess that you are tied to and what you're not tied to.
Okay. I am tied to it being a local law. It's important to me. Okay. It's important to my caucus.
Okay. But, yeah.
And I am tied to the review committee that was set up in there.
Actually, that was actually the one thing that actually I wanted to ask you about there.
Because I feel like without a mechanism to review how the policy is working, especially with something as ever-changing as green vehicles. I mean, in my lifetime, I couldn't, have imagined, cars that you could plug in. I mean, you could see it, you could imagine it in TV and movies and stuff, but, and now you've got cars you can, back into your driveway and plug into the wall.
All right. Just to continue, because I was asking the question of whether you're tied to, what you're not tied to. When we did a local law banning the use of pesticides and herbicides on county-owned property,
yes,
we created, there is a mechanism in there, there's a committee that meets that, and they're the ones that can say, all right, fine, they can allow for a one-time use application, but they're actually all made up of internal departments of the county.
Yes.
There's no legislative membership on that committee.
There's no voting legislative membership on this committee either. I can't imagine that we would be against having non-voting members from a different branch on a committee when we already have non-voting members of a different branch on the other committee.
Just bringing it up.
Fair enough.
with the Mr. Guy.
I got a sense where this is going, but I just wanted to ask, we just did a resolution number 43, setting a policy by resolution to create a platform for the managers of the county. Why resolution for that and local law for this? I'm trying to understand.
One of the reasons the local law for this, and I have to find it in here, so you have to give me a second, is we're setting a, Erica could say it better than me, the section 6, number 3, we're setting a level that the county has to have of green vehicles. And it's important that it be local law because we're not suggesting or setting a goal, we're setting a standard. The standard is that by 2018, we're going to have 2% of the passenger vehicles purchased or leased or otherwise obtained as green vehicles. Beginning in 2018, ensure that a minimum of 2% of passenger vehicles purchased or leased or otherwise obtained within the fiscal year by the county are green vehicles. Green vehicles purchased, leased, or otherwise obtained that quantify in another vehicle weight class for purposes of this requirement qualify as a passenger vehicle on a one vehicle for one vehicle basis.
Okay. I'm sorry. Can he answer your question?
Yesterday at length, and I began by saying, I'm really glad we're having this conversation. I'm glad that there's something concrete, and when I first saw this legislation, which was when it was posted, I recognized a lot of it because after the two platforms, we used some of the same source material.
Never need to reinvent the wheel, right?
That's it. I mean, and when Tim told me the things that he was tied to, while I disagree with him, I don't really think this needs to be a local law because it's overseeing our internal policy, or what I see as internal policy. It's even a local law establishing a policy. So I don't think it needs to be a local law. I disagree, but that's not going to be the ultimate thing that's going to be a deal breaker for me, a local law or not a local law. I don't think it needs to be, but whatever. And the review committee, my instinct for that, when I looked at a lot of the other legislation, there's examples of review committees in a lot of the other legislation, and in the earliest discussions with Manna and then later talking to Peter, we didn't put it in because of what we perceived to be charter overreach, but I think we're going to have to get that analyzed and discussed. But again, for me, the most important parts of any green fleet policy are, one, how we define, and more importantly, how we prioritize what is a green vehicle. Because for me, there is a distinction between a renewable, all-electric vehicle and an LPG or a CNG vehicle, where the U.S. Department of Energy and the definition of green vehicle in this legislation kind of sees a green vehicle as equal across the board. Everything's the same. So, and then the other thing for me is really setting a more aggressive goal in terms of emissions. The fact that there's what we just pointed to in 2008, that which I think could be just in a policy, it doesn't have to be a
2018.
A policy could say that a minimum of 2% within a fiscal year, but the reality is I think 2% is 4 vehicles. So
yeah.
Even based on the executive proposal for hybrid purchases this year, we'd exceed this plan in 2015.
I haven't seen any.
But the point is, I think that I think that I'm hoping that we can find some way to make them both work. I mean, this legislation talks about, proposes the concept of an idling policy, and our legislation, just to differentiate the two, so our legislation puts it right in. You know, and that's something Ken and I talked about. Like, I think that we can, I'm hoping we can find some way to not have a circular conversation about both and find some way to...
Okay.
Amanda,
you
want
to...
Yeah, and thank you. I just had a few concerns about how this is set up, and just it kind of notes from the field, you know, as far as how things are kind of on the ground. And mainly, you know, we're in the fortunate to have a fleet manager, and that person really does manage the fleet. And they are very much responsible for overseeing the entire inventory, for interfacing with every department that's making requests for vehicles, even the sheriff's department, talking about which vehicles are old and are going to be accessed from an auction off out of the fleet. So there's a level of hands-on interaction with all the departments over the entire fleet inventory that is just sort of just so captured in what you're saying as far as the oversight.
Well, if I could just respond to that real quick before we move on. Before we get beyond this point, can I just go point for point? Is that all right, Mr. Chairman? I understand you're probably talking about the report that's going to be generated that each department head would do for the vehicles. I mean, that's I understand that the fleet manager probably has a lot of this information, and it wouldn't be, I don't think, unreasonable for the fleet manager to share it with the department head and have that be the way that the report could be generated. Again, I try as much as possible not to write in positions that could be eliminated. Like Department of Public Works, we can't eliminate that without a charter change. But we could very well, if the next executive could come in and eliminate the fleet manager's position without action by the legislature. And then we'd have to, if we had 100 references to fleet manager in the local law, we would have to go through the process of amending the local law. That position is gone.
This is a very good, and we started this discussion last fall where we presented some information on the fleet, and I'm happy to share that again. We have a very good handle on the age of the fleet, what vehicles are being used, how many gallons are being used by every single department, as far as gasoline consumption. We've also been able to inventory, go look at, by vehicle type, what the departments are using. So there's a very, between the Department of Environment and fleet managers, there's a very hands-on with exactly what's being done. I think pushing that back out to a committee makes it more cumbersome and will not aid it in doing anything. There's also, I think, a problem with how it's written, as far as the goal being 2% of passenger vehicles obtained within a fiscal year. To me, that reads 2% of being purchased.
That goal is a requirement. I want to put that out there.
If we purchase 5 vehicles a year, now we're talking
You can't do half of a vehicle, so it would be one vehicle. But I understand that. That's a good change.
Obviously, I appreciate the back and forth. A couple good things. I think it's really good that the Environment Committee is looking at green fleet policy. We've worked really hard over the last few years. Amanda has done a great job. I know last year we did a lot of meetings, so we met with Amanda Joe and the trees, and we've been a lot of conversations. We've had really good questions, and we're doing good reports for them. There's a lot of, conflicting things here. I know that, one of the heart of this debate is, do we do propane or CNG cars, or do we do cars that are of a sustainable nature, whatever, but...
You're going to allow them to just ask,
I'm not a legislator, Pete. I don't care. Let them speak on other issues.
I'm suggesting.
Just like I let Amanda.
Yeah.
I know. I didn't make a big deal about that one either.
There's a lot of really good knowledge and information with our director of the environment, with our fleet manager. I'd like to do a really good state-of-the-art policy. We can, when we work with the committee and really do it, if you want to, collaboratively in a positive way and get something done. I know we've got competing proposals here. I'm more familiar with one than the other since we've had a bunch of meetings where they'd ask questions and whatnot. And we commit ourselves to just putting together something that makes sense, but it's understandable. It's not just back and forth and whatnot. And I put that offer on the table for the administration.
First of all, on section 4B1, there's actually a typo. It should say, to be consistent with what it says everywhere else, giving priority to purchase electric, hybrid electric, and hybrid. It says hybrid, hybrid electric, and hybrid. So that's just
a typo. You're in the next one. We're still with that.
I am.
Yeah.
You're in
Tracy.
Yeah.
We're still right now on local ones, which is the one. I thought there was some suggestion of trying to make that suggestion. So then my other point is, and this applies to both of them, that I would like to see some direct input from the current head of transportation, the fleet manager, and for me to make an informed decision. I understand a lot about autos, automobiles. I do not understand about buses and heavy equipment and, you know, the larger vehicles, the plows and such. And so it's very hard for me to understand how these, either of these proposals applies to that. And so I think we may need more information.
Okay, Rich. I'm just going to say quick, I'm supporting this one because a lot of this language about the type of vehicles and the different sources of renewable energy and energy efficiency comes from, there's no politics behind it. It comes from the federal government with their list of approved uses and appropriate uses for people that are interested in preserving the environment and protecting the environment and doing good things. Lots of states are doing this, private companies. I work for Verizon, everybody knows. We are probably 4,000 miles ahead of Ulster County in terms of using renewable energy in our vehicles and our technologies. We have hybrid vehicles, we have LPG vehicles that are extremely successful. I just got a brand new bucket truck. The idle turns off after like 7 minutes. And I jump more than 7 minutes, it automatically turns off. Then it, from sitting down, it turns back on. 7 minutes later, it turns back off. I get a report every day if I want. If I'm bad, I get it, of how much idling I did. My boss will come out and say, hey, what were you idling yesterday? Your truck, you were here 8 hours. Your truck idled 2 hours and 53 minutes. They know exactly what we're doing every day. Ulster County is not even... We've probably never heard of this stuff, unfortunately, a lot of it, but this is coming from people that have done this already, and that's why, what?
That's GPS at this moment.
No, I know that, but it's all environmental reasons. It's to save money on gas, so it's to save money, and it's
to save money. It's not GPS, though, it's also the monitoring of the actual vehicle.
They know when I'm up in a bucket, they know how long my bucket's up in the air, they know everything, and I'm going to bet Ulster County doesn't have one vehicle that would meet any of these standards. Are probably, it's not even on our radar.
Sure.
This plan here, because it's talking about implement, anti-idling policy, I've seen people without dogs in their vehicles have their cars running while they're inside businesses for hours, or a half hour, or 40 minutes. No need to keep the air conditioning on in the summer. But they do. Does anybody know? Is anybody tracking that in the county now? Of course not. So to me,
this does address a lot of it, and I think this is good. Is it perfect? No, none of it, nothing we pass ever is perfect, whether it comes from this side of the office or that side of the office, none of it's perfect. But a lot of them are good, and really good, and this is certainly really good, and I think this is the way we need to go, and we can work it as we move. So,
John, you know, I'm looking at this legislative intent and purpose, and the committee to look at it. All this is a report card. It's a report card. If you're going to implement policy, you want a report card. Now, what Rich just said is absolutely true. We've been buying vehicles for years, and none of these things have been implemented. To get a report on how things are working, well, we could have started on that a while ago, but nobody is interested. So we have to start somewhere, and this policy appears to be a comprehensive policy that requires voluntary transparency. Not, oh, we've been working on it, oh, we've been doing it, or oh, we have an idea. This requires it, and I think it's long overdue.
So, going back to my earlier comment, which was you wrong, basically what you were wedded to and what you...
The first two things were 100% wedded to, and then there's going to be other things that I'll be willing to negotiate. I may not agree with everything.
Because here's the thing, I mean, are you anticipating this actually going to the floor this month, or are you anticipating next month?
If we were able to find consensus tonight, I would have liked to have it go to the floor. But if we don't come to consensus tonight, and we want to hold off and try to have it back and forth, I would be comfortable with having a special meeting of the environmental committee with the fleet manager and the Department of the Environment, and everybody can come here and talk about it. I mean, going back to what Amanda said, section six. You know, all these things, all these requirements could be overseen by the fleet manager.
I still have, unfortunately, Mr. Robinson had to go. And
I apologize. It's been here.
It's okay. Anyway, firstly, though, I think just to get this out of the way, just like right now, just for this immediate piece of legislation, can we agree that the 2% is just way too low, and we should, you know what I'm saying? Maybe if you can't find it at the level now, or that maybe it's through negotiation, but that we can change that component of it.
I would be willing to change it from 2% of the passenger vehicles purchased, leased, or otherwise obtained, to 2% of the fleet at that point.
Okay.
Tracy?
I think Ken, one, brings up a good idea, the concept of a special meeting, because I think something that's critical, like one thing that Rich pointed to in this local law number 3, is, you know, the concept of an idling policy in whatever the resolution number is later, 132. We actually put the idling policy in. So what's important, I mean, I feel like Ken and I have gotten farther in the discussion in terms of the back and forth of like where do these two things differ, where can we meet, and where are there issues, which that's going to take a little bit, like one-on-one we can get it, but I feel like the committee needs to go through these two and say, okay, what's the, like, some of the language, this inventory shall include A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, is identical. Right, but that's what I'm saying. We use a lot of the same base, so I feel like we need to go through as a committee and see where do these two depart. Where can we come together and get input from, like you're saying, the fleet manager, the director of the environment, and then find out what we can move forward.
Okay. One of the things that Tracy and I talked about on the phone was the idling policy, and the reason that I left it vague in this local law is because I'm not an expert in each type of vehicle and how long it needs to idle. Because diesels need, especially during the winter, need to idle. If you don't idle a diesel, you can damage the internal components of it, right? I don't know. We can talk to the RA. They've got a couple of LP vehicles.
No. Okay, so then we're looking for a special meeting as a committee. Is that correct?
As long as everybody's comfortable with that, I mean, I would
whatever these folks want to deal with. But, you know, somewhere along the way, we ought to at least give temporary approval or qualified approval so these things don't get caught in limbo and postponed. I mean, this is, there's two of them here that everybody seems to be working together on. Great. It's, I just think after watching this place for 10 years, that things get lost when they don't at least move incrementally. Mm-hmm. Yes, let's give qualified approval pending the next meeting. I'm not suggesting at this point, but I feel very strongly that have another meeting and I could just see folks inventing new roadblocks rather than say, this is a really great idea. As long overdue.
Well,
pardon?
You finished?
Yeah, I'm finished.
Okay. So what's the pleasure of the committee then?
Well, I think we should have a special meeting dedicated to this, actually having...
Should we have two policies?
Amanda, if you're available.
Well, the county executive is supposed to come, but we can ask the county executive to have her come.
I can say that
I'd like to know what
then the
can we purchase vehicles in the future that they turn off after 7 minutes. Oh. And every day a report will be given how long each kind of vehicle is.
Again, there's been a lot of work done. You know, that's part of that issue, but I think that the members of the committee may not realize that a lot of good work already been done. I'd like to even be able to, you know, have some of that, you know, education of kind of what's been done, what's in place, what's going on.
I just want to say something real quick. In regard to, I'm not in favor of it being, at this point, being a local law. I have a real issue with making something like that a local law.
What's your concern?
It takes away all flexibility to make changes. Unless it's much more difficult to change a local law than it is.
One meeting in a public hearing. You don't think the public?
I don't think.
Okay.
I think, truthfully, that if you want to make a change, they should have the ability to change. It should be a policy. I do not believe that it should be a local law.
That's your prerogative.
That's not discussing that only because we're not voting on.
No, I mean, that's your prerogative. I always think that most public participation is the best thing for government.
Look, you don't play politics.
It is politics.
All right, you're trying to make it sound like, I let the public know. We got to talk to the public about everything we do. We don't. Okay, we're elected to represent them and hopefully make the right choices. Okay, that's simple. Okay, but you can do the same thing with a policy. You can have an informational meeting. You can do whatever you want. But the fact of the matter is, and I'll get to you, Rich, there's no reason to continue to make local laws when you can do it with a policy. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say, you know, Pete, I'm disappointed. We just talked about getting the two resolutions together, working together, and then you stand up and say, if it's a local law, I'm not supporting it.
I didn't say that. I said I'm not in favor of local law.
Did you say I'm not supporting it if it's a local law? Did anybody else hear that other than me?
Unless you can convince me.
What I'm getting at is, it's not really a great idea.
It doesn't mean anybody.
Well, then you know what? Then I'm going to move the question that we vote for the local law. Because if we're not going to work together, then I want to vote on the local law.
We just said that we were trying to make work together and have a meeting to get everybody together. And that was my next question, which was making sure that we have more than just a fleet manager.
Right. And then if there's a genuine interest for people to come together, I honestly don't care if it's a local law or a policy. Neither one is a deal breaker for me. I don't care. Because at the end of the day, we want the policy to be effective and work. So I don't care if it's a policy. When one member says it's going to be this way or the highway, then I'm not interested in working with that person.
I think
we have a good one right now, and I'm willing to vote for it.
If they can convince me, fine. But I said to you, just like a couple of months ago, we did the same thing. I can't recall what it was, but I voted no against it. I said, this is not unnecessary. It doesn't have to be a local law.
I forget what it was.
Okay.
Who cares?
Go ahead.
I was going to make a recommendation that Kathy or Chris or I don't know if Vicki ever does it, but if there could be an attempt to try to blend the two pieces of legislation.
Oh, goodness, no. I'm sorry. I don't think that we could have an outside party who's not a legislator and try to blend the two together.
Hold on for a minute.
Well, that was my suggestion.
Sorry. Hold on.
I also just think, I just want to reiterate that we are, remind folks that we are in a climate crisis, and yes, I agree we have to move quickly, but I think we also have to move pretty aggressively to create a real green fleet. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. So I'm going to echo part of what Manager said, and I know Manager did. You're coming from the same perspective. One thing is obviously where we're debating, you know, numbers, right? So, you know, 2% of what, right? You know, that kind of thing. But I think her suggestion of at least, I think what you maybe mean to say is we should probably be actually have an analysis of just understanding which parts are the same, right? And that's because understanding what parts are different. I'm sure we could actually have someone like Chris that go and highlight where highlight says highlight. It's a different color or whatever, because the printers print different colored ink. So they'll go highlight those areas where they're different and where we need to be working on harmonizing these two policies. Number two or three, wherever else at this point. Beyond fleet management, right? Who else at this point is the fleet manager actually dealing with every single vehicle in the county? I mean, every single one, not just, all right, so every single vehicle, she's going to be up to speed on whether it's a plow truck, a UCAT bus, or all right, I mean, she's going to be up to speed on that, okay, because that's the one thing I want to make sure that just in case we're missing something, I want to make sure that beyond having her here, just to make sure, because that's going to be kind of a critical piece, because we have a diverse fleet of vehicles, as you know, so. Sure, but I'm thinking through that. It's not just
right.
Other kinds. If you have, it's divided up more than one person. So,
I see what you're saying by wanting someone else to analyze or, you know, sort of summarize the differences. But I think, you know, these are both.
We try to change all the time. I'm just saying
but what I want to say is that these are, you know, they both been in the packet for, it's a very short period of time. They were, you know, posted a week ago.
Yeah.
So I think if knowing that there's a special meeting, if everyone in the committee and everyone that's interested actually just looks at the two, one against the other, there's a lot of good in both. And to earlier points, keep an open mind about how we can work together about what are the things that we want to see, what are the goals that we're hoping to attain, and how do we get there, then I think a meeting dedicated to this could be very productive. If we all come preconceived notions aside with source material in front of us, I mean, you and I had a really good
conversation. I don't think that we're too far apart, so.
Let's come with an open mind, and let's try to make something that we can all be proud of and feel good about.
Thanks, Chairman. I'm going to give this to Krista, and I'm going to ask her to scan in an email to everybody. This is just some more background information on the general powers of local governments to adopt and enact local laws of New York State Municipal Home Rule Law, which I believe, you know, and I'll, it's already highlighted with the sections that we believe are applicable to this local law as to why we make a local law instead of a policy.
Just a couple of comments. You know, I heard a statement before that we've done a lot of work on this and a lot of effort's been gone into it. You know, I'm going to use Resolution 42 as an example. An awful lot of work was done on this by professionals. Not by me, but by professionals. To try to get it right. There was very little interaction. Now, Resolution 42, if and when it should pass, doesn't require the boss to do any remediation in a given year. There's no requirement that they have to accomplish something if they feel maybe it's not a good idea. A local law
put some restrictions on what's going to happen. You will give these reports. You will move forward if you add more whereases to it. This one here is a local, is not a local law. And so he feels like ignoring it for right or wrong. Let's say for right, the right reasons. They don't have to do it. But a local law, they have to give you the information.
Is that true? I mean, through the local laws. My question is, because again, the local law thing, I disagree that it should be a local law, but it's not a deal breaker for me. I'm not stuck on it, kind of like Rich said earlier. But is it true that if we pass a policy that it's not binding, you don't have to follow it, that the executive is like, but is it your choice? Your balance, right?
I think one of the questions is what the remedy is if you don't follow it. Between a local law, there are remedies. And between a policy, unless there are remedies stated within that resolution, I'm not sure what. I think there are. It could be up to a misdemeanor to not follow local law. There are state remedies.
Oh, beyond what would be.
Correct. Not internal, external. But I don't know of any remedies for not following a resolution unless they're within the resolution. In other words, what do you do? So let's just say, whatever it is, whoever says, I ain't get to it.
So we establish a policy that requires audio recordings of all meetings. If all of a sudden the clerks say, forget it, we're not recording any meetings.
Or the chairman orders the clerks.
That's being within the policy. But if the chairman says, tell all the clerks don't record any meetings. You're saying that there's no remedy, there's no way of dealing with a virus.
I don't know that I'd say there's no way, but there's no way within that policy itself, no way within that resolution. You certainly could fire someone. You could have a meeting and call for them to do it again. You may be able to remove them. There's lots of stuff that, but not within that.
You go to the same kind of court that you.
No, absolutely not. You can't have them. There's no criminal penalty.
That's a civil.
Article 78 civil stuff is so separate. Mm-hmm. You can also file an Article 78, of course.
Interesting.
Only like a writ of mandamus. Yes.
No, I don't know.
Yes.
That's fine. Yes. All right, so let's move on. Let's go to the last resolution.
Well, we haven't done this when we're going to have a meeting. You want to have a meeting or what?
Yeah.
Okay, when do we want to do it? You call.
Chairman.
You want to send them on by email and find out and show
everybody what the meetings that are.
Let's just get to the goddamn point of when we're meeting.
What are people's
schedules?
Deputy County Executive just asked for some latitude with it to find out whether or not staff would be available. So why don't we correspond by email and find out the earliest possible date for everybody, including
staff.
Thank
you. I'll call you tomorrow. I'll call Krista tomorrow.
What is the meeting schedule for next month? Is it the
I'd like it, if all possible, to have it before then.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is it the
8th?
First one.
Can I just say one thing about Wednesdays? I mean, I can come any night, doesn't bother me. Mary Rayro takes care of her mom on Wednesdays, and it's very difficult for me to have this meeting.
Thank you for the effort. That was good.
She told me that today.
Yeah,
she called me today. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I can do it any night, except unless I have another committee meeting. But it'd be nice if we just kind of celebrate her.
It's important for her, I think, that
she really wants to come to me.
Trish, what were you asking?
I was asking when the next meeting is. Is it the 1st of April?
No, the 1st of April is the resolution deadline.
What's April 4th?
It'd be the 8th then, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe that, maybe in that week between the 1st and 8th, and where they're meeting the 30th of the week.
Yeah.
So can we're taking no action on this one? Yeah. So we'll take no action on 109.
My suggestion, if I could, would be to I would like to make a motion that we postpone both 109 and 132. Right, as I'm saying, postpone both of them until the special meeting that we're going to have, and I want that in the record so we make sure that we hold ourselves to having a special meeting. So that's that makes that motion.
Okay, and I'll know better tomorrow if there's people in Chris there.
Okay.
Okay, we'll check something out as soon as we can. Okay.
Let's go to the last local law.
Was there just a suggestion to change the night of the...
There was a suggestion, but we haven't made any. Okay. We have to walk
to check with Marion.
Okay. You guys do.
I just wanted to be sure I heard that correctly.
Well, I got to make sure that it's in contact with other people.
Well, listen, there's been plenty of nights. There's a meeting here and a committee meeting over there, and if somebody's not on the committee, then it works.
I've been in a position where the two
months back and forth.
No, I see. Okay, so what do we got now?
129.
27?
129.
I'll move it.
Need a second. Need a second. If you read me quite a legislator, it's already
if everybody's filed with first names, I'll just start doing that.
If it bothers people, it's a cause, you know, whatever.
As Rich said earlier, I think a bunch of people spoke to Mary. Mary's really sorry that she had to be here today. She came up at the last minute, she had coverage, and it covers all through for her mom. I'm asking that the committee meet in a packet. There's a red line information on technical changes that both Kathy and Chris Ribucci have reviewed as technical only in nature and not substantive. So we're asking if we can make these changes in committee today before it goes to the floor.
Thank you. At this time, we have an amended version of this local law. I move the following amendments as presented.
I'll second.
Can
you get a second?
I'll second.
Did he second it?
Discussion. Thank you.
On the amendments?
On the amendments?
Okay. I guess through the chair to council, under prepared food, it says any food or beverage that is one served in Ulster County, two is packaged cooked chopped sliced mixed fruit, frozen squeezed, or otherwise prepared on the premises, and then we're removing of a chain food a chain of service establishment.
Tell me where you are exactly.
I'm sorry, it's definition prepared food is page 2. Second definition of the polyterry. We're removing of a chain food service establishments in Ulster County. I understand the idea that we
Page 3. You say physical page 2? Page 3 is what I'm trying to tell you.
Page 3.
There you go.
I apologize.
I apologize.
And thank goodness for the Rob Perry law, the double-sided printing law, or policy, I remember that earlier on. Prepared food on the premises of a chain food service established within Ulster County. I don't know if it was it I guess I'll ask Tracy for that in the last time. Was it a mistake to put that in there?
Yeah, it was, technically. It was a holdover from the Albany County law.
Right.
It's only focusing on food service management.
Right.
And it was brought to us, and because the definition is regarding prepared food, which then would be defined in Section 4 in terms of prohibition itself, that's where, you know, it refers back to prepared food and then you go to the definition. So prepared food needs to be defined for both of them, not just one, because
right.
they're covering both. And it was actually brought to our attention by the lobbyists for the grocery stores and the lobbyists for the
right.
convenience stores. Both of them said they were not going to raise objection, but they just noticed that there seemed to be an outlier from the Albany County law, which is accurate.
So maybe I mean, you know, I hate to be a pain in the ass, but I guess it's just one of my that opens up a whole separate section of restaurants, eateries, etc. to the definition of prepared food, because it's taking the prepared food from just food service establishments to every restaurant in Ulster County. I would find that to be substantive. Even though it was a mistake, I mean, it's
not, but I think you're arguing the wrong thing, because the law says, if you go to Section 4B, no food service establishment shall sell or otherwise provide prepared food. So it's already in the law that no food service establishment should sell or otherwise provide prepared food, and I can speak to that change in a second, so this is purely text.
Oh, yeah, what section are you in?
If you
go as far as that, it's the next change. It's the next right.
So it's not opening up anything. It's just, it's clarifying that definition is regarding prepared food, not where it's prepared. Because Section 4, the prohibition on the use of disposable polystyrene foam food serviceware, which is technically the meat of the law, says in B, no food service establishment shall sell or otherwise provide prepared food. So it's already opened up in the law. We know that. That's been the point of debate through the whole process. This is just clarifying prepared food. And even if that language were to remain in the law, there's still a prohibition on selling or otherwise providing prepared food in no food service establishment at the point that it becomes effective for no food service establishment.
Yeah.
And the reason, if I can just get to the next change, the reason for the next change, which you can see, is we had written polystyrene foam disposable food serviceware, and we're changing it to any disposable food serviceware that contains polystyrene foam. It's the same gentleman pointed out. It's saying the same thing, but it's saying them different. And for an attorney, that begs the question, like, why are you saying the same thing differently? Is there a difference? And I said, you're right. Let's just make it technically clean and have it say exactly the same thing the same way.
Are you done with that explanation?
That's fine.
Okay. So, on the amendment?
On the amendment?
Coming up. Not finished yet. Sorry. Can I continue or no?
2 minutes.
Okay. Fair enough. Tracy, when we talked on the phone, you had mentioned you were open to opening up the exemption further, and the way we discussed it on the phone, or at least the way I perceived we had discussed it, isn't the way I'm seeing it now, so I just wanted to...
So the change in the exemption section, which is on page 4, the next page, comes from Rich Parody's suggestion for the tobacco law, which I think was a good one last time, and was brought up by Chris Allen, talked about the requiring that within 30 days, and because it's left on the attorney said it's not substantive change. What Ken and I spoke about was the exemption form itself, and I pulled, because of a conversation I had with another legislator, I pulled an example of the existing exemption form for the city of San Jose, California, which has the same exemptions as proposed in this legislation, which is unique packaging hardship and a financial hardship. And when I actually looked at their exemption form, which is what I was talking to Ken about on the phone, their exemption form, rather than, because there had been some discussion about requiring tax forms to prove that you, in the course of long ago in the day, to prove that you've got the financial hardship. And when I looked at their actual form has a space, if you're checking for the financial hardship, it says, and I can get this for everybody, it says, how much, please fill out line 12 from your tax form, you know, how much you made, and then it says, I test that I made under 300,000 and I swear, blah, 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 and that's what I read to you over the phone. And I read it as an example because this law leaves the enforcement in the purview of the Commissioner of Health, so the Commissioner of Health will have to come forward with creating whatever the exemption form is. But when I saw that exemption form, I thought, wow, because we've all, in all discussions about this on and offline, I think everybody has come to the agreement that, and the actual understanding that we're not talking about instituting the polystyrene foam police. There's going to be no major enforcement arm that's going to be running up and down the street, but that's not what this is about. It's going to be a part of...
There's a lot of laws that aren't enforced.
Right, and I'm hoping that...
I don't know that's enforcement, but the idea he doesn't...
As a matter of fact, it's going to be a part of, you know, I'm expecting it'll be a part of, there'll be an education process, and it'll be a part of the Commissioner of Health or their designee, as they're issuing licenses, saying that it's coming down the pike, it's a year away, and what, as they come up with that form, what I'm going to do is that I think a form like that puts the trust in the purveyor who's asking for the exemption, that basically says, you tell us you need it, and you're swearing that you need it, you know, we're giving you, for the most part, the benefit of the doubt, unless there's some reason not to believe you. I mean, I think we believe the businesses are in But that's not, we can't overanalyze the law. So it wasn't a change in the law. I was talking to you about people that I saw
I think that we should write something into the law or include in the law a form that we would like to see used, because I don't want to necessarily leave it up to this Commissioner of Health or a future Commissioner of Health. And again, the future Commissioner of Health is the kind of thing that I base my decision-making process on. Why, you know, because under the local law right now, they could require each business who requests an opt-out to give their tax documents. And I'm very concerned about, and again, this probably is beyond talking about the amendment, so maybe I should stop. But as part of the amendment, no, I guess it's beyond part of the amendment. So I'll stop on the amendment now. I'll wait until it's long.
I got
to
read five.
Yeah,
all
right.
Sorry, we got it.
All right, so what are we doing with regards to this?
It's the amendment.
No. I'm aware of where we're at in terms of process. I'm just saying Mr. Rock was raising the issue of the hardship component. Can we go back to that?
Well, I think Tracy and I forgot that was going beyond the amendment, so
yeah.
I just vote on the amendment real quick. And then
well, there you go. So, Mr. Chair, I call the question.
All right. Those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Carried.
On the resolution. On the resolution.
So you want me to answer what you're saying in 2 minutes and then I have to go? I mean, I think I will definitely be providing the samples and any backup documentation. You know, we've had the public hearing process and no one spoke against it. And in fact, all the outreach that both Mary and I have received from the business community, as I told you, we heard from lobbyists for the change. We had a meeting with Dr. Bonus. And the response pretty much was, we are not going to object. And you saw that at the public hearing, there was no objection. I'm comfortable with the local law, the way it's written right now. And I'm also comfortable that we know that there's not going to be the polystyrene police, that
we don't know that
we're not going to overreach. And I also know that, as from a conversation with Legislator Ross, that basically nothing we do on this legislation right now is going to change Legislator Ross's vote. So
the hell with my opinion.
No, but I don't think you've had a debate. You know, I mean, it's...
Okay.
Thank you. Right now, you know, you see, you just have to, you know, of course the chains aren't going to object because the chains already know what to do. I mean, they already have in place, you know, providers and things like that. Now, at this point, of course, I'm supporting the law, I'm supporting it going to the floor, but when you say that to me, it's just that, you know, talking to local business owners is a mix, honestly. And, you know, I live in downtown New Paltz where everything's in a styrofoam container, or not everything, but many things are, you know. So it is...
Zero waste.
It is... No, I'm saying, yeah, a zero waste community, we think. But, you know, but we think. But everything, I'm going to be sure this morning, everything in there is in styrofoam. But that's... I actually do, by the way. But beyond that, what? I don't heat anything up in it. So, anyway, more importantly, though, I would think more on this before we sleep, so at this point, I move the question.
Well, I mean, I don't want to cut off discussion, but...
No, I mean, it's just a thing where this came up before, and I was just
I don't want to cut anybody's discussion.
You know, so at this point, I want to vote, if at all possible.
I'd like to just make a couple more comments, and then we can... I'll just give up. I'm obviously going to lose, so it's okay. There might be the polystyrene police down the road. If we're going to call it that, I mean, there might be a future executive or a future Department of the Environment or a Department of Health, you know, Commissioner of Health, that comes forward and starts going crazy and finding these people and everything of that nature. And there might be, maybe our county executive now would send out a nice form to everybody, you know, check this box if you qualify for the exemption. But in addition to there being an exemption, usually if there's an exemption to something and you're denied, there's some sort of a review process, some sort of an independent hearing officer or some due process to grieve the decision of the commissioner. There's nothing built in here. In fact, the determination of the commissioner shall be final and is not subject to appeal. That concerns me. I think that there should be an appeals process. You know, usually, I mean, in the past, all the appeals processes in New Jersey have been lukewarm. In a lot of the Department of Health regulated laws where there's no police, like the smoking ban on county property, and you see people smoke on county property, you know, they get the ticket. I mean, that's a change that I would like to see. Now, there might be nothing that makes me personally vote in favor of the whole law, but it doesn't mean I'm not interested in making the law better in the meantime.
I just feel we had months for you to bring specific changes, and it was before us and discussion from us, and we've had the public hearing.
You've got the same people you got the people that you're going to expect to come to a public hearing. You know,
It's based on the samples, the other models that I saw. And also, too, to Ken's earlier concern, I really feel like if there was an appeals process, the appeals process would necessitate documentation. If you're saying, if you were denied for whatever reason, the appeals process, you'd have to bring your tax documents. So we're kind of bringing back to 10%.
I think it's fair law.
Call the question. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? There we go. And with that, we have nothing else to...
Can I make one comment? I just want to just say, I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but I was disappointed, and I wish he was still here, because I would have said it. I would like Ken to hear it. When we were discussing the first resolution, which was the properties, when he spoke, he said, well, I already know how everybody's voting, or insinuated that I know where this is going, how everybody stands. It's insulting, because I think I know me, I do vote a lot of different ways, and I think it's just because you may not be happy where somebody stands, it doesn't mean you need to try to demean them or say that they had no interest in, you know, that, you know, we're all elected, we all have a right to vote how we want. And you may not be happy, well, at times all of us may not be happy, but I think we certainly need to respect that we're all trying to do our best. And and I just took that comment in personally.
If I could just jump in here too, I also think, and this is sort of a piggyback to a comment I made earlier with him in the room and with Amanda in the room, it's starting to become a concern to me the manner by which the executive departments and the executive staff participate in the meetings by making unsolicited comments unsolicited by questions by a committee member, almost as if they're a member of the committee or a member of the legislature. I have no problem with them being, I enjoy the fact that they're here and are here to answer questions and everything, but to argue back and forth with legislators or you know, unsolicited of a question for clarification or policy of the executive branch, it's a concern.
I'm not trying to say that's not equally welcome. We have to have a conversation, obviously, about the course of meetings as to who's talking when and why and everything like that. Because I mean, it is a thing that and it's been going on, you know, the past couple of years, and it's not been good. I mean, legislators clearly are the ones who are the decision makers here. We are the ones who
agree.
All right, and. You know where I'm going with this in terms of previous conversations you and I have actually had. So, I mean, we do actually have to have a very, very strong conversation about that stuff. It's not just that, it's also other people at this point interjecting as well.
Right?
Like, that's also inappropriate and it needs to stop. So.
I also think that this is a distinction, though, if we're talking about our legislative attorneys trying to give us,
But unfortunately, though, you both been present where that people have defeated that. Yeah, it's happened.
And when it's been staff that reports to me, I'll tell the committee that I have done my best to discuss it with them.
Okay. What's wrong,
Jeff? We will do, I guess, the updates at the special meeting. Can we at least guarantee that we're going to do a Climate Smart Committee update as well as a solid waste disposal improvement commission update next meeting? Please. Thank you.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Well, very good meeting, by the way. That was a pretty good meeting.
At least Snotty is here in the class. At what point is our cutoff?